What happens when the FBI's most seasoned counterintelligence experts gather around a whiteboard and write the initials DJT at the top? This wasn't a theoretical exercise or political theater. In early 2017, FBI leadership faced a question that had never before been asked in American history. Should they open a counterintelligence investigation into the President of the United States himself? Below those initials were names: Manafort, Papadopoulos, Flynn, Page, all Trump associates with troubling Russian connections. This moment crystallizes the central tension of our era, when the person sworn to protect national security might himself be the threat. What do you do? The answer isn't found in partisan talking points, but in understanding how foreign adversaries manipulate democracies and how one FBI agent's journey from revolutionary Tehran to the Trump investigation reveals the fragility of American institutions. Picture an 8-year-old boy chasing floating scraps of paper as his father burns sensitive documents in a 55-gallon drum. Beyond their walled compound in Tehran, a mysterious figure watches. It's December 1978, and Iran is collapsing into revolution. This early exposure to geopolitical upheaval, fleeing Iran just before the Shah's departure, witnessing anti-American fervor firsthand, planted seeds that would shape a counterintelligence career spanning 2 decades. Following his father into military service through ROTC and the 101st Airborne Division, the young officer absorbed lessons about constitutional principles and civilian control of the military that would later define his approach to investigating political figures. Raised Republican, he learned to vote based on national security judgment rather than party loyalty, a nuance lost in today's tribal politics. The 1995 Oklahoma City bombing became his catalyst for joining the FBI, where he discovered his calling in counterintelligence work. Tracking Russian and Chinese threats wasn't just a job, it was defending the democratic ideals he'd seen threatened abroad. From a white Dodge Intrepid after midnight, surveillance teams entered a Cambridge bank through the back door. Inside a safety deposit box belonging to Don Heathfield and Tracy Leanne Foley, a seemingly ordinary Canadian couple, they found 35mm negatives. Along one uncut border was printed Takhma, which in Cyrillic transliterates to Tasma, one of the oldest Soviet film companies. Despite years of meticulous training, these Russian illegals had left evidence of their true homeland in a vault just miles from where America was born. This was Ghost Stories, a decade-long investigation into Russian sleeper agents living under false identities constructed through dead doubles, the KGB's practice of assuming identities of Canadian children who died young in the 1960s. The surveillance required legally authorized intrusions, monitoring weekly shortwave communications with Moscow, examining trash, breaking into apartments with specialized teams that preserved every detail. On June 27, 2010, arrests came during a son's 20th birthday celebration. Within 2 weeks, these illegals were exchanged in Vienna for 4 Russians who had allegedly worked for the West. Years later, in 2018, one of those exchanged Russians, Sergei Skripal, was poisoned with Novichok nerve agent in England, Putin's chilling message about betrayal's consequences. September 11, 2001 changed everything, not just America's psyche, but how the FBI conducted counterintelligence. The attacks exposed critical flaws: legal barriers between agencies, outdated technology, bureaucratic conflicts. Congress responded with the Patriot Act, enhancing information flow and streamlining processes. Yet few appreciated how digital technologies would transform threats beyond terrorism. Edward Snowden's 2013 theft of thousands of classified NSA documents revealed how modern technology enabled leakers to take vastly more data than predecessors. Russian active measures evolved from planted newspaper stories to viral social media campaigns. Unlike traditional propaganda, requiring press intermediaries, modern disinformation thrives on uncertainty and doubt, spreading through networks of willing believers. In June 2014, two Russian women from the Internet Research Agency, a troll farm funded by Putin ally Yevgeny Prigozhin, entered America for a three-week, nine-state road trip gathering intelligence on social divisions to fuel sophisticated manipulation campaigns exploiting racial tensions and conspiracy theories. The Clinton email investigation, mid-year exam, followed three tracks: locating emails, identifying classified information, and investigating unauthorized access. Two realities emerged. Classified information was mishandled, but evidence didn't meet criminal thresholds. Most classified spills are handled administratively, not criminally. Prosecutors historically only pursue cases involving deliberate disclosure or egregious behavior. By early 2016, conclusions were clear. Insufficient proof existed for charges. Most mishandled information was merely confidential, the lowest classification level, often up-classified after the fact. No evidence suggested Clinton deliberately destroyed work emails. When a PRN employee deleted emails after a congressional subpoena, he'd simply forgotten earlier instructions and panicked in an "oh shit" moment. Clinton's 3.5-hour interview was professional but anticlimactic, intelligent and well-prepared, though some answers troubled investigators, like claiming not to recognize C portion markings. Director Comey's unprecedented public statement without DOJ approval troubled the team. With hindsight, this was the wrong choice. They couldn't predict they'd reopen the investigation before the election, creating a precedent that would haunt them. On July 27, 2016, Donald Trump publicly requested, "Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing." Within 5 hours, GRU Unit 26165 launched spear phishing attacks on 15 Clinton campaign accounts. Intelligence revealed Trump advisor George Papadopoulos had told an Australian diplomat that Russians possessed damaging Clinton information and offered to coordinate its release before the DNC hack was public knowledge. Deputy Director McCabe ordered immediate investigation under extreme secrecy, creating a tightly controlled bigot list to protect innocent parties. Four candidates fit their investigative matrix: Papadopoulos, Carter Page, who had previous Russian intelligence contact, Paul Manafort, with extensive Russian connections, and Michael Flynn, who had engaged with Russian officials and sat beside Putin at an RT dinner. Unknown to investigators, Manafort was simultaneously delivering detailed campaign polling data to Konstantin Kilimnik, a Ukrainian with Russian intelligence links. One principle guided everything. This investigation was about Russia, not the Trump campaign. In fall 2016, while managing the Russia investigation, the Clinton email case suddenly resurfaced. On September 28th, the New York field office discovered hundreds of thousands of emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop potentially related to Clinton. Bureaucratic miscommunication caused weeks of delay. Meanwhile, the Russia investigation accelerated. October 7 brought colliding events: the Access Hollywood tape, WikiLeaks' Podesta emails dump, and the government statement confirming Russian responsibility for the DNC hack. When the laptop issue resurfaced October 25, they immediately sought a search warrant, despite the election being 2 weeks away. That night, Trump advisor Rudy Giuliani ominously hinted on Fox News about some pretty big surprises coming, suggesting he knew about the development. After deciding to reopen and notify Congress, they worked through the weekend. By Saturday, November 5, they had narrowed 3,000 relevant emails and worked late into the night reviewing them personally. By early Sunday morning, they confirmed nothing new would change their understanding. Going into Election Day, they knew Putin aimed to undermine confidence in America's electoral process. Both Comey's announcements and Russia's multi-pronged attack likely changed the election outcome, though small margins in key states make certainty impossible. Trump's victory brought crushing urgency. As 2016 ended, they prepared to close Flynn's case when intelligence revealed, after Obama imposed sanctions for Russian election interference, Flynn secretly asked Ambassador Kislyak that Russia not retaliate. Putin's restrained response puzzled experts until they discovered Flynn's intervention. Flynn now appeared indebted to Russia, whose silence he needed. On January 6th, Comey briefed Trump on the Steele dossier's Moscow allegations. Rather than outraged denial, Trump asked what year it occurred and said there were no prostitutes. Innocent people typically react with anger, not by nitpicking details. After Flynn resigned February 13, Trump pulled Comey aside. "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, part of a pattern pressuring for loyalty." Comey's May 9 firing completed an alarming pattern, puzzling Putin loyalties, Sessions misleading Congress, now decapitating the investigating agency. By June, Mueller's special counsel was established. In late July, they raided Manafort's condo and arrested Papadopoulos. That day, a DOJ Inspector General investigator requested discussion about text messages from the Clinton investigation, the beginning of a personal storm. In December 2017, the New York Times asked about text messages, likely leaked as a partisan weapon. Stories about removal from Mueller's team triggered immediate fallout. Photographers staked out the house, threats poured in. On December 3rd, Trump began tweeting, the first of hundreds of attacks continuing today. After months of interviews, belief persisted the IG's report would confirm the Clinton investigation was unbiased. Initially, it did. But weeks later, after reaching DOJ and likely the White House, Horowitz claimed newly recovered texts caused reconsideration, particularly one reading, "We will stop it," regarding Trump's election. When the revised report released June 14, Trump gloated. That afternoon came notice of proposed termination and administrative leave. Termination came August 10, 2018, ending a 25-year career. The Inspector General ultimately concluded there was no documentary or testimonial evidence that political bias or improper motivation influenced the decisions, confirming what was known all along. Standing in a basement among boxed remnants of an FBI career, the weight of loss mingles with clarity about what remains. The Russians continue targeting American elections, altering voter rolls, tampering with results, spreading disinformation. The investigations revealed Trump's willingness to further Russia's interests for personal gain. A senior agent named Charlie once cautioned, "With enough power, they can find ways to make the injustice legal." But those boxes won't remain in storage forever. Service might have been interrupted, but there's still work defending American democracy. Foreign adversaries study our divisions and exploit our weaknesses. The greatest threat to democracy isn't external enemies, but our collective choice to prioritize tribal loyalty over national security. When presidents ask foreign powers for help, when intelligence professionals are punished for doing their jobs, when truth becomes negotiable, that's when democracies die. The question isn't whether Russia attacked our elections. The evidence is overwhelming. The question is whether we care enough to defend what generations fought to preserve. Your vote, your voice, your willingness to demand accountability, these are the last line of defense.